testing, testing. I'm just suggesting you and I might not be the best thing. Exit, exit. Somehow I guessed it right. Alright, but I still want ya, want ya. Don't mean to taunt ya. If you leave now, I'll come back and haunt ya. You'll remember, return to sender now, now. Well, I just wish we could go back one more time and begin it back before I lost myself.
We Just Got the Start Wrong by The Yarn Maid's Tale. Read by Mist Marauder. I swear to God, she hates me, Chimney grumbles as he slumps in his seat, fiddling with the label of his beer bottle while Hen sits across from him, one eyebrow cocked in worry as he starts to peel the label away. It started with the coffee thing, and now she hates me. Is this about your neighbor again? She asks with a sigh, as she rolls her eyes and twirls the straw of her drink. Chim, you gotta let it go. What do you mean, again? Chimney asks. Every day for the past 2 weeks, it's something about your new neighbor, Hen says matter-of-factly. She is the only thing you've been talking about. Chimney rolls his eyes, because that's not true. It's not. Really? It's just that every time he turns around, his neighbor's done something that sets his teeth on edge or raises his blood pressure, and he tells Hen because she's his person, you know? If it happens to be a frequent thing, it happens to be a frequent thing. But it's not a thing. Hen shoots him a look. Besides, how can you hate her without knowing anything about her? I know things about her, he asserts, shaking his head when Hen shoots him another look like she doesn't believe him. I know everything I need to know about her. Okay, Hen says simply, gesturing toward Chimney with her glass. What's her name? He pauses, blinks, and opens his mouth to say something, only to close it again when he doesn't actually say anything. Because he doesn't know. Her name, that is. It's never come up. He'd be more annoyed, but he's also fairly certain she doesn't even know his name, so he figures they're probably even. Chimney tells himself that his annoyance has nothing to do with the fact that if they weren't on opposite sides of a battlefield, he'd probably even be inclined to flirt with her, because she's pretty. And her eyes are the warmest shade of brown he's ever seen. Not that he's looking or anything. The fact that their destinies lay in mutually assured destruction is an unfortunate tragedy, but it's their reality now, and he's just going to have to live with it. The day he first runs into her is a Saturday, and he's running late for work. He wakes up to find that he's overslept a good 45 minutes, and that he must have slept wrong because there's a sharp twinge on his neck every time he tries to turn it. He realizes how late he is when it dawns on him that there's enough time to make coffee and grab a quick breakfast or take a shower, but there's not enough time to do both and still be at the station on time. He wastes more time thinking about his lack of options and hops into the shower with the thin hope that Bobby's prepared breakfast or that he still has granola bars stashed somewhere in his car. Chimney bumps into her as he's darting down the stairs, and she's precariously balancing a box in one arm and a cup of iced coffee in the other as she goes up. The splash of cold coffee drenches his shirt. And it's apparently the last straw in the list of things that went wrong today, because the patience he usually has is zapped and replaced with something colder and harsher. Hey, watch where you're going, he snaps, immediately regretting it. It's not her fault he woke up late. Not her fault that he was the one that bumped into her. But there's a piece of him that feels better shifting the blame. Whatever apologetic look she had in her eyes vanishes as his tone registers, and her mouth settles into a frown. It was an accident, she says. Yeah, well, now I'm going to be late. He gestures down to his shirt, his white shirt, now stained a dull beige, as if it proves it's her fault. There's not enough time to change it, but he has a spare or two in his duffel. He walks away before she can say anything else, muttering and cursing under his breath, though he's certain he hears her do the same to him as he goes. Chimney makes it to his car, and halfway to the station, when he realizes he was most definitely in the wrong and that he should probably apologize for biting her head off. But he doesn't know her name, or even what apartment she's in, and doesn't know how much research he can do on it before it's considered stalking. But when he gets home that night, after a particularly hellish shift, he finds her car parked in his spot, and assumes it's her payback for him being an asshole about the coffee thing. And he's forced to find street parking instead. The next morning, he gets a parking ticket. And it creates the perfect storm that quickly becomes this tour de force of retaliation that spirals out of control. He's still going on about his neighbor? Eddie asks, as he sets down another round of drinks before sliding into the booth beside Hen. She takes a sip of hers before nodding. Yeah, Hen says with a shrug. Was going on about her earlier in the ambulance, too. You sure this isn't some middle school thing where you're just being mean to each other because you like each other? Eddie takes a swig of his beer as he asks, looking at Chimney with searching eyes like he's trying to find a crack in Chimney's story to prove his point. He flinches at the insinuation and wants to pull his hair out. He'd like to think he's beyond that kind of childish behavior, even if his and his neighbor's push and pull isn't exactly evidence in his favor. I'm sure, he insists, as he sighs in exasperation and runs a hand back through his hair. You know, Hen begins thoughtfully. Now that you did mention it, some of the greatest love stories ever told started with people who hated each other. Like? Chimney scoffs. But one look from Hen, and he knows exactly where this is going. Hen eyes him knowingly. Pride and Prejudice. Chimney rolls his eyes and buries his face in his hands. Fine. I'll tell Eddie about the Jane Austen thing, but you're on thin ice, Hen. Eddie chuckles, but relaxes into his seat as he prompts Chimney to continue. Oh, do go on, he says. I definitely have to hear this. Two days after, the coffee thing becomes the Jane Austen thing, and that one is more of an awkward conversation faux pas than malice. He never meant to spoil the book for her, but such is his life and his unfortunate tendency to put his foot in his mouth. He enters the laundry room to see her sitting cross-legged on the table, next to the only open washer, reading a worn copy of Pride and Prejudice. Chimney figures now is as good a time as any to extend an olive branch. Because he likes Austen, has always appreciated her literary merit, and if he's being honest, Pride and Prejudice, both movie and book, holds a special place in his heart. It's his favorite, because it was his mother's favorite. Something they bonded over. And as she got sicker and sicker, it made him feel closer to her. Still does after all these years. So, he's excited to see her reading it. Wants to talk to her about it. And he tries to as he starts loading his laundry into the washer. Darcy's second proposal gets you every time, doesn't it? I just really love how the girls get their happy endings, he says with a smile. He looks over at her and... oh. She's giving him a look that does not look pleased or charmed or anything of the sort. Oh. You're not at that part yet. No, she says, snapping the book shut and sliding off the table. I was not. This is my first time reading it. This is not going the way he planned. And judging by the way her eyebrows are knitting together in annoyance, there's no real way to salvage the conversation either. Don't worry, though. She tucks the book back into her bag as she brushes past him. My good opinion, once lost, is lost forever. After the Jane Austen thing, comes the laundry thing. Also known as the second laundry thing, if you count the Jane Austen thing as the first laundry thing. He doesn't. She does. He catches her moving his laundry along in the cycle. She claims she only touched it because she needed to use the washer and he hadn't shown up. Says she even waited a reasonable 10 minutes before breaking laundry room etiquette. Though she maintains he broke it first by not getting his laundry when it was done, but whatever. He calls her a washer-hoarding monster as he plucks the worn university hoodie out of her hands and tosses it into the basket at his feet. There's the way she always rolls her eyes at his jokes and turns to look away from him every time he makes them, as if to remind him that she doesn't think he's funny. Or the way she always hits the elevator door buttons when she sees him walking toward them. Then, there's the parking thing, where they routinely spar over the parking spots closest to their apartments. She calls him the worst parker in LA, after he deliberately parks so close to the line, it's nearly impossible to get a car in beside him. But in his defense, she started it. Anyway, we're stuck in this cycle of pissing each other off, and I think it's my turn, Chimney says, as he catches them up on the most recent happenings in the New Neighbor Chronicles. You do know this isn't a game you have to play, right? Hen asks. You two can stop and talk like actual adults anytime you want. Chimney grumbles that this is more fun, even if it really isn't. If he's being honest, he doesn't like being at odds with people, especially his pretty new neighbor, even if he doesn't know her name because he didn't stop to ask it. And now that they're warring, he thinks it'd be awkward. Hey, guys, sorry I'm late. Buck sounds a little out of breath as he approaches the table. Hope you don't mind, but I wanted you guys to meet my sister, Maddie. Be nice. She's new in town, and she tells me her new neighbor is a massive asshole. Oh my god, it's you. Oh, you've got to be kidding me, he mutters with a roll of his eyes. The table falls quiet against the backdrop of the crowded bar. As Eddie, Hen, and Buck trade nervous glances between them, Chimney wonders if it's possible for the ground to swallow him whole. How did you not know my neighbor was your friend? Buck's sister. Maddie, he corrects, asks, jabbing Buck in the shoulder with an accusing finger. When you said there was an asshole in your complex, I didn't think you meant Chimney, Buck defends, as he sweeps his arm toward Chimney, and Chimney isn't sure whether he should feel insulted or not. Speaking of, why are you being so rude to Maddie? It dawns on him then and there that the Maddie that Buck's been talking about for the past couple of weeks, the ER nurse from Philly looking to make a fresh start, is the same woman who's been driving him up the goddamn wall. He wants to ask why Maddie is being so rude to him, but the awkwardness is quickly settling in around him. And he honestly thinks it'd just be better if he left before it gets worse. I think I should just go, he says quietly. As he slides out of the booth and takes a few bills out of his wallet to pay for his beer. As he does, he wonders which is worse. The fact that his new neighbor is his friend's sister and her presence in his life is now even more unavoidable? Or the fact that his friendship with Buck is probably hanging precariously on a ledge since his relationship with Maddie is hostile at worst and awkward at best? Either way, he's embarrassed, and his ego is more than a little bruised. He just wants to go home, hide for a while, and hope that this is just one giant nightmare that will be gone by morning. It's not, as it turns out, because the uncomfortable feeling in his chest is still there on Saturday. And again on Sunday when he briefly runs into Maddie on his way out the door to get groceries. They share a brief, curt nod as they pass each other, the closest they've gotten to a somewhat truce, and he does his best to make sure he avoids her when he returns. When he gets to the station for his next shift, he's expecting Buck to be more antagonistic than he is, but the younger man seems to have moved past it. His suspicions are partially confirmed when Buck pulls him aside between calls and says that Maddie made him promise to not hold their feud against him. In return, Chimney stops talking about Maddie at work, keeping anything that happens between them to himself. He doesn't want this to get in the way of his work and their working relationship, and so he does what he does best and compartmentalizes. In the weeks that follow, he and Maddie are in a stalemate of stiff politeness and even stiffer cordiality every time they find themselves in a shared space. It's the kind of awkward, taut amiability shared between people who hate each other that's fooling absolutely no one. It's enough to keep the peace, even if the peace is a little awkward, but they're both trying, and he thinks that has to count for something. He manages to dodge her around the complex well enough, to avoid any more laundry things and parking things. The most they see of each other outside run-ins at the mailbox here and there is when they set aside their differences long enough for a night out for drinks or game night at Bobby's. His streak of avoiding her comes to an abrupt halt when he finds her leaning against the hood of her car, sniffling as though she's been trying not to cry. He lets out a breath and tilts his head up to the sky. Crying women have always been his weak spot, and he's pretty sure that if Buck, or Mrs. Lee, now that he thinks about it, found out he'd left Maddie maybe crying in a parking lot, he probably wouldn't hear the end of it. So he readies himself for whatever comes and clears his throat. "You okay?" he asks. He's always felt a little stupid asking people if they're okay when they're obviously not. And it's never not awkward, so he kind of approaches her like he would a frightened deer. For a moment, he thinks she's not going to speak to him, but she sniffles again and wipes at her eyes with her sleeves before finally turning to look at him. "I've just been having the worst of luck today," she scoffs. He thinks she means him, on top of whatever else it is she has going on. And he sees the moment it dawns on her, because she's trying to backtrack. "Oh, it's not you, for once." He rolls his eyes at the way she tacks on the "for once" at the end, but goes to stand beside her anyway. "You want to talk about it?" There's a moment of silence, and he thinks that's her answer. That she doesn't want to talk about it. At least not with him. Which he wouldn't have blamed her for. If he were her, and had the relationship with him that she does, he doesn't expect he'd be willing to share. "The sink in my kitchen is leaking, and the landlord says he can't get it fixed until next week, but the noise is keeping me up at night," she says after another moment. "I can fix that," he cuts in, shrugging when she gives him a disbelieving look. "What? I'm good with my hands." Maddie chuckles and shakes her head with a smile. That'd be great, actually. If you don't mind helping a washer-hoarding monster, that is, she says, as she nudges him with her elbow. Chimney winces. Yeah, not my proudest moment. And work today was just a nightmare. It's like the whole city was just in a mood, she huffs. I know it's probably silly complaining about work to you, because God knows what you guys put up with every day, but people can be just awful, he finishes, and she nods. I get it. And he does, probably more than most people. He almost tells her about a call earlier in the week that was horrible not in its outcome, but in the way they were treated on scene. Instead, he tries to lighten the mood and tells her about how he was convinced a crow was stalking him a few months ago, and that he had tried to bargain with one for his name tag. The story makes her toss her head back in laughter, and he's more than a little satisfied with himself at the result. It feels good to make her laugh, see her smile. I know you don't like me very much, but if you ever need someone to talk to about your day, you can come to me, he tells her. He feels a little silly offering, even if he's being completely sincere and earnest about it, because he's sure she goes to Buck about things like that. Beside him, she thinks about it, before nodding and thanking him. They fall into a steady silence that he doesn't quite know what to do with. So he finally asks the question that's been lingering on his mind since he found her out here all alone. So is Buck coming to get you for the Christmas party? Nope. Maddie shakes her head as she laughs, a short, humorless huff of a laugh, and gestures back towards her car. I was going to drive, but my car won't start. Told you, it's been a rough day. Chim jerks his head towards his car a couple of spots over. Come on, he says. I'll give you a ride. She looks hesitant, chews at her bottom lip as her eyes soften. Are you sure? I don't want to be intrusive. I can call Buck, really. Chimney shakes his head. Not a problem. We're both going to the same place. Makes no sense for him to drive all the way here and all the way back. He gestures to his car with a wave of his arm. Last I checked, that thing still seats more than one passenger. That is, if you don't mind sharing a car with the worst parker in L.A. Her face scrunches up in embarrassment, and he finds it cute as she follows him to his car. I'd apologize, but I think that one might actually be true. He catches the teasing tone in her voice, the smirk on her face, as he opens the passenger door for her. You're very funny, Maddie Buckley. I try, she says over her shoulder, as she gets into the car and he shuts the door behind her. They arrive at the party at Bobby and Athena's place on time, and to his surprise, things are actually going rather well. Though the ride to the party was quiet, he and Maddie are getting along, and for once, their peaceful cohabitation feels neither forced nor fabricated. Something shifted, however minutely, within the past couple of hours, and he wonders if things would have been this easy if the coffee thing hadn't happened like it did. She drifts off during the party, blending into the crowd of their mutual friends. He sees her glide into Athena's arms across the room, greeting her with a smile as Athena offers a glass of wine. He turns to get a beer from the kitchen, ignoring the way Hen's eyes catch his. Hen's across the room before he knows it, brushing against his shoulder as he loads up a plate with appetizers. So you and Maddie drive in together? Yes, he said simply. Her car was broken down. She nods and plucks a carrot from the veggie tray. That was nice of you. I'm a nice guy, he shrugs. Hen makes a thoughtful noise as she leans closer into Chimney's space. I know you are. I know Maddie is nice. The question is, how can two such nice people hate each other? Things just happen that way, I guess, he mumbles under his breath. The thing is, Hin says, I don't even think you actually hate each other. I think you guys had a misunderstanding that got out of hand. Hin raises her eyebrows, and he knows she doesn't believe him, that things don't just happen that way, and he thinks he might agree with her. This entire push and pull, give and take that he and Maddie have been doing for weeks was born out of a bad mood, paired with an accident that they never actually cleared the air on. He fears it might be too late, that this weird kind of friends gray area is where their relationship is bound to stay, even if they get past the snark and the missteps. When he doesn't say anything after a few moments pass, Hin pats him on the shoulder and leaves him be. He does his best to brush off the things she said by mingling with his coworkers, but before long, he starts to feel a little claustrophobic surrounded by so many people, and instead tries to find somewhere quiet to think. He finds her outside in a deck chair on Athena's porch, with a glass of wine between her fingers, and thinks that now is as good a time as any to at least try and set things right. Should have known you were going to take my commune with the stars spot too, seeing as you took my parking spot last week, he jokes, and sits in the chair beside her, lips curving into a smile as she rolls her eyes, but smiles anyway. You mind? Your company? Always, she quips, bumping her shoulder against his. Was about to go back inside anyway. She starts to stand, but Chimney catches her by the elbow. Please don't, he says, clearing his throat. I was actually hoping to talk to you about something. He expects her to stand and leave him sitting there anyway, so he's a little surprised when she just nods and sits back down. What's up? Chimney takes a deep breath in, surprised to find his heart hammering in his chest. He starts, chuckling to himself as he runs a hand through his hair and rests it on the back of his neck. I wanted to apologize for being an asshole for the past few months. Well, I wasn't exactly pleasant either, Maddie says beside him. She's set the empty wine glass down beside her and has moved on to twirling the ring on her index finger around as she talks. No, he admits, but I shouldn't have bitten your head off with the whole coffee thing. I was having a bad day and I shouldn't have taken it out on you. I accept your apology, but I should also probably apologize for stealing your parking spot. And I didn't mean to spoil Pride and Prejudice for you, he continues. I just really, really love that book. And was so excited to talk to you about it, I didn't even stop to think you hadn't read it yet. I'm sorry for never holding the elevator for you, she says after a moment. And for moving your laundry along every week. No, actually, you're probably right on that one. Honestly, I'm more hurt by the fact that you don't think I'm funny, he states. For weeks, I've been trying to lighten the mood with jokes, and it never works. Chimney, I think you're hilarious, she says. Like, annoyingly funny. It's why I can't look at you when you talk half the time. And see, I thought that was just my charm. She shoves his shoulder as he laughs. So, tell me about this love of Jane Austen. The smile she gives him is warm and inviting, and it brings a smile to his face. Maddie rests an elbow on her knee, her face in her palm as she nods for him to continue. He does. Not the whole story, because he thinks it's a bit early to tell her about how much the books connect him with his mom. But he finally gets that discussion on Pride and Prejudice that he's been wanting. A debate on themes and motifs segues into a discussion on the movie that somehow leads them on a long meandering path of obscure quotes from action flicks she hasn't seen, and that he promises to show her. They're so engrossed in each other and their company that the knocking at the porch door startles them. Chim looks over his shoulder to see Bobby tapping his watch and nodding toward the dining room. "Guess we're getting kicked out." He holds out a hand to help her stand and steps aside to let her go first. He follows close behind as they re-enter the Grant Nash household to see people gathering their coats and saying farewell. As they go to leave, they're stopped in the doorway by Hen, who points mischievously to the sprig of mistletoe hanging above their heads. Chimney rocks back nervously on his feet, hands shoved into his pockets as he glances back and forth between Maddie and the sprig of mistletoe pinned to the doorframe above them. "You don't have to, kiss me, really. It's an archaic thing, any..." He's cut off by Maddie as she fists her hands in the lapels of his jacket and tugs him forward to capture his lips in a kiss. Once the initial shock wears off, he relaxes into the contact, one hand moving to caress her face, tilting it to get a better angle. As he tangles his fingers into her hair, her grip tightens on his jacket. Whatever conversation was going on around them dies as their friends turn their attention toward them. Her lips are soft and pliant against his own, the light vanilla tones of her perfume enveloping his senses. Moments pass, long and glorious moments, where the only thing he cares about is him and her and this. After weeks of being at odds, Chimney knows exactly how he and Maddie got off on the wrong foot. But now, as he's kissing her under the mistletoe at Bobby's party, he'd kind of like to get on the right one. Somewhere in the background, Buck loudly and awkwardly clears his throat. Maddie pulls back with a satisfied sigh and settles her hands against his chest. Her warm brown eyes connect with his, and he has to really, really fight the urge to kiss her again as she reaches up to brush a smudge of lipstick off the corner of his mouth. "You were going to give me a ride home?" Maddie asks quietly, brushing a stray lock of hair behind her ear. "Right," Chimney nods and opens the front door, gesturing out toward the driveway. "Your chariot awaits." He follows her out the door without so much as a word or a look back to his friends. Chimney doesn't have to look to know that they're trading shocked, open-mouthed glances at each other. The ride back to their complex is eerily silent, and he's more than a little afraid he's somehow misstepped again, and all the work they've done to repair whatever this is has gone down the drain. They walk shoulder to shoulder through the complex until they reach Maddie's door, and she turns to face him. "So," Maddie begins, and he can tell she's nervous by the way she's gesturing with her hands as she tries to talk to him. "That kiss back at Bobby's, that wasn't awkward for you, was it?" He shakes his head. "No, of course not. I was actually hoping we could do it again sometime." And oh, does he kind of really want to kick himself? They've only been friends for an evening, and he's already implied that he'd like to kiss her again. Figures he should have started with wanting to get to know her better, but he's feeling bold. He wonders if there's any way he can laugh it off, pretend like he was joking. But by the way her eyes are searching his, he figures she's picked up on the hope and sincerity that underscored his words. "I think I'd like that," she says finally, as she rests a hand on his arm and steps closer into his space. "You wanna get dinner sometime?" Chimney can feel palpable relief flood his body. "Name a time and a place. I'll be there." "Next Friday night at 7 work for you?" "Absolutely." He smiles as she leans up to press a kiss to his cheek, before bidding him goodnight. As he turns and walks back toward his apartment, he thinks that maybe the coffee thing didn't turn out so bad after all. The end.
Stuck now so long, we just got the start wrong. One more last try, I'ma get the ending. Suggesting you and I might just be the best thing.